ओम ईश्वरो गुरुरात्मेति मूर्तिभेद विभागिने व्योम व्याप्त देहाय दक्षिणामूर्तये नमः। ओम श्री गुरुभ्यो नमः। ओम नमो भगवते रुद्राय।
Thank you for the kind and generous introduction. Honored guests, friends, namassarvebhyah, salutations to everyone here. It is an honor to be here to help celebrate this Maharudra Yajna. I was very pleased and delighted to hear the proposed topic for today's talk. The general talk of the series is Kaha Rudraha Eva, who is Rudra? And specifically for today, Yajnaha, an expression of our infinite love for the limitless Lord. An expression of our infinite love for the limitless Lord. And the reason this is such a delightful topic is because it raises so many good questions, so many audacious and bold questions, because by raising these questions, it implies that we have a means to know the answer. For example, Kaha Rudraha, who is the Lord? What's the nature of the Lord? What's the nature of love? Who am I to be able to offer love to the Lord in the form of a devotional act called yajna? What is yajna? What is a devotional act? And what is limitlessness? Infinite and limitless are basically synonyms. Yajna, an expression of our infinite love for the limitless Lord. In Sanskrit, the term is ananta. Antaha na asti yasya saha. That which has no limit. And what do we know in this world which has no limit? How can we understand limitlessness? Everything we know is desha kalu vastu parichinnaha, is confined, is constrained, is conditioned by time and space and attributes of an object. This podium didn't exist 100 years ago, and it won't exist 100 years from now. Unless, of course, it's made from plastic, then it might last another 1,000 years. And every object, this object only exists in this particular place. And it has the attributes of a podium. It's not a chair. So the very existence of another object limits this podium because they're two separate different things. So what do we know of anantyam, of limitlessness? Very good question. And it's appropriate because the Vaidika tradition invites inquiry, invites questions. We're not asked to blindly swallow beliefs. We're invited to inquire and question because it's a knowledge-based tradition. Veda itself, of course, means knowledge. But in the Upanishads, in the Bhagavad Gita, we see all sorts of questioning. And a main part of sadhana, of spiritual practice, is to ask questions. We see Nachiketas in the Katha Upanishad going up to Lord Yama, asking him, really, what's the nature of the individual? Some say it survives death, and some say it doesn't survive death. What's up? And Yama says, no, don't ask me that. That is a very subtle question. Here, have sons and grandsons who live 100 years, have all this wealth, have a kingdom, but don't ask me that. And this boy, Nachiketas, says, no, this is what I want. I am a jignyasu. Jignasa means jnatum iccha, the desire to know, a curiosity. And if it's backed by mumukshutvam, by being one who desires freedom, desires to solve the fundamental universal human problem that we all face in the world, then that becomes a powerful driving force wherein his Nachiketas could say, no, I don't want any of this. I want to know, really, what is this all about? Who am I? And who is the Lord? And we see even the names of Upanishads. Prashna Upanishad means questions, and an Upanishad filled with questions. The Kena Upanishad starts with a question. Kena, by whom, by what is this mind impelled towards its objects? We see Arjuna asking, peppering Sri Krishna with question after question, saying, you're confusing me, Lord Krishna. You're as though confusing me. Please tell me again to give me the answer again. And in the commentary, the Sanskrit commentary tradition of Sri Adi Shankaracharya, we find what is called Purva Paksha Siddhanta. It's a method of revealing what the Shastra says by means of question and answer, by sometimes very aggressive questioning. The Purva Pakshi, the objector, will raise objections and say, your premises are wrong, your assumptions are wrong, your logic is wrong, you're misinterpreting the Shruti. And the commentator will have to answer all those difficult questions. So this is a tradition of inquiry, and it has a value for knowledge. And like I said, it implies that we can know. So if we are a jignyasu, if we desire to know what's the nature of the Lord, what's the nature of myself, what's the nature of Ishvara, right? What is yajna? What's the means of knowledge for that? We want to know. We have many means of knowledge at our disposal, right? If I want to see form and color, I open my eyes. If I want to hear music, amplitude and frequency, I put myself in a place where I can hear music. Pratyaksha, direct perception, obvious means of knowledge for things in the world. And that gives aparoksha jnanam, a direct knowledge of an object. We also have means of knowledge that give us indirect knowledge. For example, I can know that there's fire up on the hill if I just see the smoke, because I know wherever there's smoke, there's fire, and therefore I know that there's fire on that hill. We even say that there's various other means of knowledge. For example, how do you know that I don't have an elephant on the palm of my hand? How do you know there's no elephant on the palm of my hand? It's not pratyaksha. You don't see the absence of something. You can only see something that's present. It's not inference. It's not like you're saying, well, therefore he has no elephant on his hand. What's posited is another means of knowledge called anupalabdhi, non-cognition. And there's other means of knowledge that are suggested. The Veda is a means of knowledge. Each means of knowledge has its own domain. Ears have sound, eyes have form and color. But the Veda is considered a means of knowledge for Ishvara, for the cause of the Jagat, the creation, and for the true nature of myself, because there is no other way to know these things. So let's look at Sri Rudram to understand what it says about the nature of the Lord. We know that Sri Rudram, you've had some talks on Sri Rudram, it's a very powerful mantra. When it's done as an anga to karma, as a part of a ritual, it's said to bless the Vaidika with prosperity here and in the hereafter. And if chanted as a nishkama karma, as a offering to the Lord with no particular result in mind other than becoming closer to the Lord, it greatly benefits the devotee and removes obstacles in his or her spiritual path. And we'll see by looking at Sri Rudram that it actually takes us from a sense of isolation and fear into one of completeness and wholeness. So there's 11 anuvakas, 11 sections. And the first section introduces Ishvara as a fearful figure. He has bows and arrows, and these arrows are very sharp, and he's angry, right? And so the first anuvaka, the first section says, please, Lord, calm down, relax, please unstring your bow, put your bow down, put your arrows down, even dull your arrows. You can imagine a devotee asking the Lord to take his arrows and rub them against the ground to make them not so sharp. Because there's a number of ways to look at this, but one way to look at this vision of the Lord as being a fearful figure is that it reveals our sense of vulnerability. I'm just this small person trying to make my way through life. I am alpajnaha. I know very little. I'm an alpashaktiman. I have very little capacity, and the world is big, and it always seems to be demanding things from me, and I feel vulnerable, right? It can be a very fearful situation. But then Sri Rudram, in the second chapter, presents a whole different vision. And he's presented as the Srishti Stiti Laya Samartha, as the Nimitta Karana, as the Sarveshwaraha, as the Lord of everything. So we see in the language of the Rudram, we see Pataye Namaha, Pataye Namaha, Namo Hiranyabhave Senanye Dishan Chapataye Dishan Pataye Namaha. My namaskar is to the Dishan Patihi, to the Ishwara of all directions. Pashunam Pataye Namaha, to the Lord of all animals, all people. People are just, humans are just animals with a bigger intellect, perhaps. Right? Jagatam Pataye Namaha, salutations to the Lord of all the worlds, the 14 worlds. And it's a very, very beautiful vision that's presented. In fact, he says, Stenanam Taskaranam, to the Lord of thieves and robbers. He's the one who is Sarvagnaha, in contrast to our Alpagnaha. He's all knowledge. He's all Shakti. And he's the Karmapaladatta. He's the giver of the results of all action. So when I see the Lord as this Sarveshwara, the Lord of everything, that invokes in me the inner devotee. And yajna, prayer, is an expression of my being a devotee. There's three types of prayers. There's three types of actions. Manasa, vachika, and kayika. There's purely mental action and mental prayer. Dhyanam is a mental prayer. Japa, internal japa, is a mental prayer. There's vachika karma, action which uses the organ of speech. And that includes chanting Sri Rudram, doing oral japa, singing bhajans, chanting the Bhagavad Gita, etc. And then there's kayika karma, physical action. It's where you take your devotion to the Lord and actually put it in physical form. And it's traditionally seen as, say, puja. We do physical acts. Dhupam agrapayami, we offer incense. Naivedyam nivedayami, I offer food. I do pradakshinam, I walk around the Lord. I offer my namaskaras. And yajna is an incredibly powerful form of a kayika karma, a kayika prayer. And each of these is supposed to include the previous, right? So when we're chanting, our mind is supposed to be backing our chanting, which is sometimes a challenge because sometimes our mind seems to go other places that our mouth is going. So that's part of our sadhana, part of the discipline of chanting Rudram is to make sure that your mind is focused on what you're doing. The Shastra says all actions produce a result. Prayer is an action, a mental or verbal or physical action. And all actions produce a result. So prayerful acts produce a result. And the results that are generated through action are either immediate or not immediate, drishta or adrishta. There's the immediate act. Say, if I feed someone who's hungry, what's the immediate result of that action? The immediate result is that that person's hunger is appeased. Another immediate result is that I feel the joy through the fact that I gave this person food. I did a compassionate act. But there's also adrishtapala, the Shastra says, and that's an unseen result, and that's punya. It's those factors in life which help smooth out our road, removes obstacles from our road. So when we sit for any prayer, we do a sankalpa, right? Mamo pata samasta duritakshaya dwara shri parameshwara prityartam, right? And what are we asking for initially? We're asking for duritakshaya. We're asking for the removal of obstacles. And we're asking for grace. We're inviting grace. And then we ask, perhaps, for other things. We ask for the welfare of others. We often have prayers that are very grandiose. May all the world prosper. May the rains come at the right time. Perhaps may the rains subside at the right time as well. And we often feel embarrassed to ask for the more mundane things. Oh, may I please get this promotion? You know, oh, the Lord's not interested in me getting a promotion or not. That's foolish. That's beneath my request of the Lord. But I say, why not? Why not ask the Lord for these things? First of all, if you've done everything you can to gain what it is you want, to get that promotion, then who else are you going to ask? And the more you bring Ishvara into your life, the closer you are to reality. The more you bring Ishvara into your life, the closer you are to reality. And we'll see why that's the case going forward. Inviting the Lord into your life and expressing devotion in physical or verbal or mental prayers recognizes something called daivam. Daivam are the factors, the many factors in life over which we have no control. There's many a slip between the cup and the lips. You know, when I'm in South India and I try to drink without touching the glass, I always say a prayer because half the time the water ends up dribbling down my shirt. And you look at, say, an archer. An archer can do everything he can. He can study archery. He can practice as much as he possibly can. He can study with the best teachers. And in the end, what it comes down to is him and the bow. He can string his bow. He can knock the arrow, right? Put the arrow on the bowstring. He can lift the bow, draw it, take aim, quiet his breath, and release. And after that, he has no control. And there's many factors which can come in between his intended target, which is the arrow hitting the bullseye, let's say, and the actual result. It takes a lot of grace to be in the right time at the right place. This archer, the target could move. A gust of wind could come and change the direction of the arrow. He could slip and shoot at the moon, in fact. There's a lot of factors that come into play with our actions. And when he draws and releases the arrow, he literally releases the arrow. But if he's intelligent, he emotionally releases that arrow too. It's only an intelligent way of living that recognizes there are many factors which really contribute to the production of a given result that I want. I can do everything in my power to try to create a result. But really, Ishvara, Sarveshvara, is the karma phala data of drishta and adrishta phalam. Bhagavan Sri Krishna says, karmanyevadhikaraste ma phaleshu kadachana ma karma phalahetur bhuhu ma te sangosto karbani. You may know this verse very well yourself. He says, karmanyevadhikaraste tava adhikaratvam karmani eva. Your adhikaratvam, your qualification, is in action alone. The only thing you can do is the action. Ma paleshu kadachana, never kadachana, in the results. You're only capable of bringing your entire being to bear on a given situation, bringing your jnana shakti, your knowledge, your kriya shakti, your ability to perform actions, and your icha shakti, to try to fulfill a desire. And you can only do what you as an individual are capable of. And when you do that, if you release that, as an archer will release the arrow, you're living intelligently. Karmanyevadhikaraste ma paleshu kadachana ma karma palahetur buhu. Don't be the one who thinks that you are actually creating the result. You can contribute to a result that you're looking to manifest in the world. But there is not a direct link between what you do and what happens. It's grace. In fact, everything that comes to us is a given, and everything that comes to us is grace. The more we perform devotional acts, such as yajna, the more we see this. We see that everything I try to do, I bring my entire being to bear upon that act, let's say. And yet, what do I really do? How can I really say that I create anything? Let's say a pot maker. A pot maker will create a pot. He says, oh, look at this beautiful pot I made. Give me some money for it. But really, the pot maker did not create the clay. The pot maker didn't create the hands that he uses, they're given. He didn't create the knowledge of what a pot is. He didn't create the physical forces that allow the potter's wheel to spin. He didn't create the physical forces that allow the clay to dry. He didn't create the notion that a pot can actually hold water and that it's useful. So where is arrogance in any of our actions? If we realize that all of our capabilities, all of our intellect, all of our power, our karmendriyani, jnanendriyani, buddhi, everything that we bring to bear in our life is given. And when we see that, in fact, everything is given to us by the Sarveshwaraha, then we begin a life of karma yoga. It's called prasada buddhi, Ishwara prasada buddhi, where everything can be seen as grace. Everything can be seen as a gift. When I get prasadam after a puja or something, I don't say, I don't want the purple flowers. I don't like purple flowers. I only want the white flowers. No, you accept gracefully what's given and intelligently, because you realize we really are at the whim of the Lord, so to speak. We only have a limited capacity, and it's daivam. It's these other forces that really give us what it is we receive in life. And then, through continued prayerful action, that bhavana, that attitude becomes reinforced. And then we begin to understand that not only is everything prasadam, everything is a yajna. All of our actions, whether we intend them to be or not, are offerings. Everything I do is an offering to this Sarveshwaraha, Sarvesham Ishwaraha, this Lord of all. And that radically changes our approach to life. And it actually allows us to play the roles that are given in our life with grace. It allows people to be as they are. And it allows us to live a more quiet and calm life, a more intelligent life, when we recognize Sarveshwaraha. This isn't the only vision that Rudra presents, Sri Rudram presents to us, because it starts off with a fearful idea of the Lord. And then it says he's Sarveshwaraha. And then you see the language in Sri Rudram change. It drops the Pataye Namaha, right? We have the Shashti Vibhakti, Chaturthi Vibhakti, and the Namaha. We have to the Lord of something, my namaskaras. And it drops the Pataye and just says, to you who are in the form of everything in this creation. It presents the Lord as Sarvatma, as the very essence of everything. Sarva Rupa, having the form of everything. It's really beautiful if you understand the Sanskrit or can read a translation. He says, Ishu Kridbhyo, Danva Kridbhyashchavo Namaha, right? Even to the people who make the arrows, the people who make the bows, to those who have shaven heads, to those who wear matted dreadlocks and everybody in between, to people who wear turbans, to people who are lying down and standing and walking and are awake and sleeping. Everybody. In fact, he says, to the people who have chariots, you are in the form of those who have chariots. You, Lord, are in the form of those who don't have chariots. You're in the form of the one who drives the chariot. You're in the form of those who make the chariots. And you are in the very form of the chariot itself. There's nothing here separate from Ishvara, because he is what's technically called the Upadana Karanam, the Abhinna Upadana Karanam, the very material cause of this creation that is not separate from this creation, right? When you bring a pot home, the pot maker, you don't bring with you. You bring the pot. But here, the very material cause of this creation is not separate from the maker of this creation. As my teacher is fond of saying, Vaidikas, Hindus, do not believe in one God. We don't. We don't believe in many gods. We believe in only God. That there's nothing here but the Lord. And so how do we understand this? It seems like a lofty concept. How do we make this immediate? We can take an example. the ocean and a wave. A young wave is born out in the ocean. And when it's young, it reaches adolescence and it feels fearless and invincible and perhaps a little invisible. You know, when you're young, you're not quite sure. You feel invincible, but you also feel invisible. And it goes along with its little wave life. And then in not too short of a time, it sees the shore. And the shore is fast approaching. The shore, he knows that he will be thrown upon the shore and he will reach his demise. He'll meet his wave maker. And he's fearful. Namaste, Rudra Manyava Uto Te Ishave Namaha. Please, show me your beneficent form. And let's say there's this guru wave that comes along, this orange wave, this funny looking wave. And he says, calm down, relax, it's not as bad as you think. What do you mean I'm going to die? I'm mortal. And the guru wave says, look at this. You are not separate from the ocean. You are not separate from the Lord. You are part of the greater ocean. You are part and parcel of the ocean. Right? All waves are part of the ocean. Divyashti is inherent in the Samashti. The microcosm is inherent in the macrocosm. The tree is part and parcel of the forest. The waves are part and parcel of the ocean. You are part of the ocean. You're not alienated. There is no alienation here. Everything you look at, everything you see, is part and parcel of Ishvara. Even the chariots and the chariot drivers. So the next time someone cuts you off in traffic, recognize that that driver is a manifestation, is a form of Sri Rudra. That car is a form of Sri Rudra. The factory worker is a form of Sri Rudra. And in fact, your anger is Sri Rudra. The pleasant and the unpleasant are all Bhagavan. And one of the subtleties in life is learning to work with that idea, with that knowledge, that even my anger, even my desire, even my fear is a manifestation of Ishvara, because he is also presented as the Antaryami, as the very order of his creation. Everything functions in an orderly fashion, whether we see it or not. We can only have disciplines of knowledge if there was an underlying order under the creation. That's why we have biology and chemistry and physics and ontology and epistemology. That's why we have millions of PhD students with their virtual knives scraping away little pieces of ignorance in the world to reveal yet more order underlying this creation in all fields. And that includes psychology. There are reasons why we feel angry. There's reasons why we feel fearful. And we understand that the order in the creation, the psychological order, is a manifestation of Ishvara. Krishna says, kama krodho vijayate. Krodha is born of kama. How is anger born of desire? Anger is born of frustrated desire. Right? When that person cuts me off, I wanted that person not to cut me off. I wanted to be where he is right now. And so I'm angry because I have a model in my mind of how the world should be. And if that world doesn't conform to the model of how I think it should be, then I become angry. And who am I to dictate how the world should be? I am a alpagnaha, alpashaktiman. I as an individual have only so much capacity to rearrange the things in the world to try to make me happy. So when we see this order in the world, we can perhaps come to appreciate that, the anger has arisen and the fear has a reason behind it, right? I take myself to be vulnerable and therefore I'm fearful. If we feel fearful, we can welcome fear. We can welcome anger. It doesn't mean that we sit down and have a tea with it. We don't invite it for tea. We don't spend the rest of our day justifying through our yukti, through our reasoning, why I'm justified being angry or why I very well should be sad. That's not what it means. But when you welcome fear, you're invoking the fearless in you. It's only someone who can touch his fearlessness who can welcome fear. And then you get a thumb hold between you and the fear. And that's, again, another step in the journey to understanding who you are, one who is free from fear. So let's go back to our wave, talking to this orange Swami wave. You're part and parcel of everything, so even your fear is part and parcel of the Lord. And the wave, he gains some comfort. He gains comfort because he realized that there is no alienation. Everything I see, everything I feel, in fact, this body, this mind, our entire internal landscape of emotions and thoughts, chittam and buddhi and manas and ahankara, right? The pranendriyani, jnanendriyani, karmendriyani, all the panchakoshas, all of that is all an expression of Ishvara. And the wave thinks about this and thinks, well, that's all very well and good, but I'm still a jiva. I'm still a little individualized wave. Even though I'm part and parcel of the ocean, I'm still going to hit that shore pretty hard, and it's still going to hurt, and I'm still mortal. And then the guru takes out his big guns. And again, the Shastra, the Veda, is a pramana for the nature of the individual. And the guru says, tattvam asi. I'm sure you're very well versed in this Mahavakya. They're not just four Mahavakyas. We think that there's four Mahavakyas, one from each of the Vedas. Every Upanishad has at least one Mahavakya because every Upanishad teaches the same thing. Sarvam kalvidam brahma. Everything here is brahma. It's another Mahavakya. What does that mean? It sounds very lofty. Tat tvam asi. You are that. You, this alpajnaha, this alpashaktiman, this limited individual, is on one side of this equation. And sarveshwaraha, sarvatma, ishwaraha, is on the other side of this equation. So how do we resolve this equation? Tat, ishwaraha. Tvam, you, asi, is the equal sign. And there's in any equation, there's an inherent tension. You can only solve an equation if you resolve one side of the equation and then resolve the other side of the equation. And so how do I resolve? You know, on one hand, I have the individual, me, and you're saying, I'm the Lord. How can that possibly be? There's just complete disparity there. And so the guru in the wave world says, you are in truth water. If you have approached a teacher who is a Kshatriya and a Brahmanishta, as the Mundaka Upanishad says, with reverence, and he's taught you through the means of the pramana, the means of knowledge that is the Upanishad, and is also included in the Bhagavad Gita and many other texts, if he's taught you, if your guru's vision is the same vision as the Upanishads, and he can create that vision in you, then you know that you are nothing but water. Satchidananda Swarupaha, that you are the nature of consciousness and existence, which is limitless, which is the source of all happiness. And he says, okay, I recognize, you know, I'm not the foam. I'm not this particular curlicue. I'm not the little piece of the styrofoam on me. My very nature is water. And the trick is to understand that on the other side of the equation, that even the entire ocean is water. When Ishvara, when the ocean says, I, right, he has to talk with a deep voice because he's the ocean, right? He's Ishvara. He says, I. He knows himself to be nothing but water. The individual wave knows himself to be nothing but water, if he truly knows who he is. So how many waters are there? There's one water. There's one water which expresses as Bhagawan, and one water which expresses itself as all these waves, all these individuals. And so that's another vision of limitlessness. Where is a duality when there's only one water? What's fundamental, what's true is the water. What's incidental is the way, is the ocean. What's incidental is the quality of being a wave. And when we discover the infinite water, then we understand that there is such a thing as ananta, limitlessness. Satchidananda is talked about in the Taittiriya Upanishad as satyam jnanam anantam. So it says that ananda and ananta are synonyms. That ananda, which is the source of my purnatvam, my fullness, is the same as limitlessness. So where does that leave love? Right? This is, yajna is supposed to be an expression of love. Let's look at our experience of love. We experience love, say, in the bliss bubble of a new relationship. When you first meet your spouse and you're married, your spouse looks at you with unconditional love, and that invokes in me a self-acceptance. I find an acceptable person through the unconditional love which I see in my partner's eyes. And I offer the same to him or her. I don't want them to be different. They're fine. I love them as they are, unconditionally. And when I look into their eyes, they feel that love for me because I'm acknowledging that they are all right just as they are. But time goes on, and we think, and we perhaps even say, you know, dear, I love you. I'd love you more if you took out the trash. I love you, dear. I'd love you a little more if you got an A on that test. Someone might say, I love you, dear, but if you made breakfast, did the dishes, took the kids to soccer, went to work, then came home and did the laundry, I'd love you even more. You can guess who in the relationship is saying that last bit. And so we seem to have conditional love. And so too with Ishvara. So too with Rudram. We seem to be fair weather bhaktas. Do we express devotion only when we're doing devotional acts? Do we express devotion only when we're doing a yajna or a puja? We seem to have the same relationship with Ishvara as we do with our morning idli. I don't mean the country, I mean the lovely breakfast I had this morning. When idlis are light and fluffy, they go down very easily. When they don't rise to the occasion, they're hard and dense and difficult to swallow. I feel love for Ishvara when life is light and fluffy. When I'm asked to rise to the occasion, when it's hard, life is often difficult to swallow. So love seems to be a passing thing. But the Shastra tells us no. It says that love is not a verb. Love is not an action, even though it expresses itself in action, in charity, in compassionate acts, in giving. Love is not a feeling, although it expresses itself in loving feelings, loving thoughts. Love is you. Tattvamasi. Satchidananda swarupaha tvam prema swarupaha. Your very nature is love because that ananda expresses that limitless purnatvam, which is your very nature, which is the water of the wave, expresses itself as joy. In a shanta vritti, in a peaceful mind, it expresses as joy, it expresses as love. So where does yajna come into this picture? Yajna, as we saw, invites grace. It helps smooth the obstacles from our path. It invokes the inner devotee. It helps us see that everything we can lay claim to is really a gift. It helps us see that all the results of our actions are gifts. Any prayerful activity, even lighting incense in the morning, just offering incense, just take 5 minutes in the morning to invoke that inner devotee. every day, and it will change the course of your day. And it'll change the course of how you relate to people. You will be able to see that this person who seems to be an irritant is really challenging you to understand what the triggers are for that emotional response to that particular person. It's Ishvara, it's Dakshinamurti coming to teach you a lesson. Everybody who comes to your desk and asks you for something at work is Bhagavan coming to you. Invoking the Lord in devotional activities such as yajna invokes this inner devotee. And in fact, it can bring to mind these truths that the Upanishads and even Sri Rudram, through the implied meaning of the names of the Lord, gives us. That there's nothing separate from Lord, there's no alienation. Everything is part and parcel of the same substance of the same Lord. So we discover a non-separation from Lord. And the more we bring Ishvara into our lives, the closer we bring ourselves to reality, the closer we recognize what is. Not only functionally, not only does it give us an objectivity with which to better meet our lives, but Paramarthika Drishti, the final vision of the Upanishads, is that you are the truth of this entire creation, and there's no alienation between you and Ishvara. So yajna, a prayerful life, is a celebration of this fact. Shivoham, Shivoham, Rudroham, Rudroham. Om Tat Sat.